This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? Let me tell you, it's a delicious, sugar-free, electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With a variety of delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt, while my favorite is grapefruit. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice or games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product, and I am replenishing our supply on a weekly basis. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first order, Element is giving us a 150% commission. That means if you spend $100, we get $150 to keep this podcast running. The best deal you can get is to buy an insider bundle. You buy three boxes, you get one free. And if you click our affiliate link, drinkelement.com/justinclimo, we will get a commission and you will get a free sample pack with every purchase. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you will be instantly refunded. If you're a longtime listener, you might know that I've been drinking AG1 for a couple of years. If you're not a longtime listener, then know that I drink AG1 on a daily basis. When I first started drinking it daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health. I had more energy, I felt more relaxed, I could focus better. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutritional supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter and better way to elevate your baseline health. I recommend AG1 to all of my family and friends because it has worked so well for me. So much so that my two eldest children have become regular users of the product. My daughter, who has been studying abroad, recently asked us to bring her more product when we went to visit her at Thanksgiving. My other daughter, who's a freshman in college, regularly contacts us to make sure we send her more product. AG1 has been transformational as it has replaced all of the needless ramekins of vitamins and minerals that I used to take. If you really want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/contacts. That's drinkag1.com/contacts to order your own supply and start on your journey to better health. Let's talk about sleep for a minute. I've had a terrible time getting productive rest and sleep for the last few years. And since poor sleep can lead to all sorts of health problems, I'm constantly on the hunt for a better night's sleep. Recently, I came across a new product called Beam Dream, which has delivered the best sleep I've had in a long time. The first time I tried it, I fell asleep on the couch within a half hour and didn't wake up until the next day. Since starting my new routine with Beam, my sleep performance has improved significantly according to both my Oura Ring and Whoop Band. Yes, I use both at once because why not have more data? If you are interested in upgrading your sleep, I invite you to try Beam Dream. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. A recent clinical study revealed that 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep. If you're looking for a way to get some rest and you have trouble sleeping, I highly recommend this product. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, Take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time. When you go to shopbeam.com/contacts, discount auto applied at checkout. No code is necessary. That's shopbeam.com/contacts.
Dedicated for up to bringing 50% you practical off. Ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your own experience. In addition to sports-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. If you liked this episode, please take the time to press the subscribe button and become a regular listener of the show. If you enjoy the episode, please take a moment and press the subscribe button and rate and review on your podcast platform. Your feedback really helps us promote the show and climb the podcast ladder. If you enjoy this episode and like what we're doing, please share it around your network. In addition, I ask that you take a moment and press the subscribe button and rate and review the episode you listened to. Your feedback helps us promote the show and attract new listeners who might benefit from the content. Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Lucas Ramirez, head basketball coach at Saguaro High School, like the cactus, I was told. Also, history teacher, student government advisor, and duties as assigned by head of school. Coach, thanks for being on today. Appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, thank you for taking the time and appreciate all you guys do.
All right, so we're going to start a little bit differently before we get into your background, since you reached out to me and gave an unsolicited compliment, and then I invited you on the pod. What was your takeaway from whatever you watched that made it land for you, right? What did you watch? Why did it land? How have you been able to put it into use? And then we'll get into your background.
Yeah, I think, first off, really good question. Starting with your background, being an athletic director, being a basketball coach, especially at a level that is relevant for myself, a lot of times on podcasts, they're bringing on NBA guys, Division I guys, so on and so forth. But very rarely do you see, at least from my perspective, on your feed, someone that you can directly relate to, whether that's someone in the high school space, youth space. And there's value in listening to everybody. But from what I kept seeing on your feed or on your stream is different ADs, different high school coaches. And I just thought that was really neat that you're able to give that platform and then also give a platform for guys like ourselves, myself, to listen to somebody who's going through the same fire that we're all going through right now, because the college game is different than the high school game and so on and so forth. I just thought it was a neat opportunity to share in a conversation and learn from each other.
Love that. Anything that you watched, heard, resonated with that you have since applied?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you something that stuck. I just thought the platform was cool. And I thought the who you give opportunities to speak to was awesome. And like we talked about pre-recording, now in my morning workouts, I need to stream you the full podcast and then I'll be able to come back on and I'll share you a divvy of notes for you next time I got you.
Love it. Love it. For those that are listening, we were talking off camera about how I feel like, based on the metrics, that the more short videos I put out, the less people download the full episodes. So those of you that are regular listeners, remind your friends, download the full episodes, please. Listen to them. It helps the metrics. It helps us move in the podcast space. But let's get back to what we're here for, Coach. Tell me how you got into coaching. What's your background? How did you get where you are now? What was the process like for you landing your first job and any subsequent jobs?
Yeah, I started, so I turned 30 in June. I started when I was 18 years old, fresh out of high school. And I was really lucky. I had a great relationship with my AAU coach here in Phoenix, Mike O'Gwin. And he was also, and currently still is, the head coach at North Canyon High School here in the Phoenix area. And I was just really fortunate. Like, I reached out to him shortly into my freshman year of college and was like, hey, like, I want to stay involved with this game, and playing is out of the question post high school. So how do I do it? What does that look like? And again, just really lucky. I had a mentor and somebody who I really looked up to when I was playing, and we had a good relationship from those days. And he took me under his wing, and I was helping him with his high school team, getting my feet wet there. And then he, also with the AAU program that he ran, there's teams from 5 years old all the way up to unsigned seniors, boys and girls, pretty big organization. So I was really lucky to just get thrown in the fire. Like, I didn't know anything. And it's funny to look back at it now, because throughout all those years, my college years, I was coaching all ages, boys, girls, and just very awesome to have somebody throw their complete blind trust in you without having experience in coaching and just saying, go do it. And you're going to figure it out. You're going to learn what works, what doesn't work. And just so, so grateful for that experience. And then, you know, throughout my 4 years in college, I went to Arizona State for my undergrad. And again, just through the process of becoming a coach and building your network and all these different things, I was able to meet a guy named Matt Gordon, who was the head coach at Phoenix College for about 15 years. And he was like, hey, you should join my staff next year. And from there, I was able to be a part of a really good junior college program out here in the area, and spent 2 years on staff there while I was finishing school up. And just anyone who you talk to, who I feel is at the junior college level, they'll tell you, man, JUCO is great because you do a little bit of everything. You're doing the laundry, you're recruiting, you're on the floor, you're working with red shirts or gray shirts. And again, like another guy who was able just to throw me in the fire and say, hey, go start recruiting and figure it out. And of course, some guidance, but again, just an awesome guy, well-respected. There's a reason he's won a national championship and has a great program, and anything he touches goes to gold. So very invaluable there. And then to wrap it up to present day, was able to, I started teaching when I graduated, and I got a job at my alma mater, Horizon High School, just down the road from where I'm at now at Saguaro, and taught 4 years there. And I taught government and history and electives and did a little bit of everything. And that was really awesome because I worked for a guy named Jerry Connor, who he's in his 80s now. When I worked for him, he was in his 70s, off-campus coach. He coached Mike Bibby in high school. That was his claim to fame, but ran a really good program down the road at Shadow Mountain High School and tremendous amount of success. One of the winningest coaches in school history and, or excuse me, in state history. And being able to work for another great guy, I've just been really lucky to work from one guy to another who's had success, but also done it the right way and really care about people and show the value in that. But it was really cool for me because I was the only coach on campus during those 4 years. I was de facto head coach on campus, and anybody who's in the high school space, you know how important that is just from a day-to-day basis, classroom behavior, paperwork, everyone's favorite, and just dealing with all those things. Honestly, any prior experience to that, I wouldn't be ready to where I'm at taking a head coaching job just 4 years ago now for the first time without having that experience as being a head coach on campus and being able to learn the ropes that way. And then anyway, after 4 years there, before the pandemic hit, literally a week before everything started to shut down, I got hired at Saguaro to be the head coach. So this is the beginning of my fourth year. We're a couple of weeks into our season, and it's been a fun ride the last 4 years. Every year has been a little bit of something different, highs and lows, but it's been awesome. I have a great administration, great athletic director. My AD is a former basketball coach, so super invaluable there. He's coached at the NAIA level, won a state championship here as a high school coach in Phoenix too. To be able to have administrators that get it, they've been there, done that, like, not everyone gets to experience that and appreciate that, I think. And it's something that you don't take for granted. So really lucky to be where I'm at right now. And just, again, super blown away when you say it out loud, just to take a second and appreciate everyone you've worked with and for, and just and appreciate the journey the whole way.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the last thing you said is the gratitude of who helped you get where you are and the things that you've learned that you don't always realize you were learning in the moment that you continue to go back to. I find myself on the show often talking about things I learned 25 years ago from my first high school coaching mentor, who was our girls coach and our athletic director at the time. So like you said, it was nice to walk alongside of somebody on that journey that kind of knew the ropes. Let me ask this, which is what I usually lead with. 4 years ago, you got your first head coaching job and you worked for some legendary people. You had collegiate, junior college experience, high school experience. You were on campus, de facto head coach, but now you're the head coach for real. What did you learn right away that you still needed to figure out?
It's awesome. So as a government teacher, I always use this comparison, like when we talk about the presidency, and everyone thinks they're ready to be president of the United States. And there's a Lyndon Johnson quote. I'm going to sound really US history nerdy here, but Lyndon Johnson stepped into the presidency, if for all the history buffs out there, he took over when John Kennedy was assassinated. And there's a quote basically referencing that. Basically, you think you're ready until you get in the chair. And then when you get in the chair, you're like, whoa, shoot, there's a lot more that goes into this. And I make a terrible comparison of being president of the United States to being a head coach. But it's true in so many ways where it's like, hey, you have your practice plans ready, you have your philosophy ready, you have all this stuff. But what is different? I don't know, just the lights are different. It's a brighter, more elevated experience. Before our first game in 20, I guess for us in Arizona, it was 2021 because we didn't play that November, December. And I turned to one of my assistants who I've known for a long time, and we're getting ready to go in the locker room for the pregame before our varsity game. And I just jokingly turned to him and said, hey, this is the exact same thing that we've been doing the last few years, except now it's at 7 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock or 5:30 at the lower levels. And that was always my approach, is have the same fun and enthusiasm with it, even though there is added stress running a varsity program, running an entire program. But I think to get back to your question though, fully, like we were all facing something that we weren't prepared with that year with a pandemic. I think that was the biggest thing because we were learning how to navigate and approach that. So there was less time to think about maybe the usual things that you would maybe approach in year one or when you want to establish your culture, whatever buzzword you want to say. But for me, it was weird. Got the job. I was told by our AD at the time and principal, hey, we're going to go on spring break. And then when we get back from spring break, you can meet the team, start workouts, all that stuff. And that just never happened. I was a crazy man harassing these kids via telephone for months and having Zooms and never meeting these guys, knowing them, and just saying, hey, this is our plan. Once we get that green light to do whatever. And for us in Arizona, it took us quite a while. And really, I think nationwide, it took us quite a while to figure out how to navigate, what to do, who knows what the right thing was or wrong thing was. But I think just that year one, it was just navigating the pandemic and figuring out how to do things, honestly.
Let's fast forward then to year two and three, where you are now fully in the chair, as you call it, right? And on the show, I think a synopsis of what most people have said is you're moving from a recommending body to a decision maker. But with all of that comes what you mentioned as the things that come along with running the program. So what are some of those things that you'd been exposed to? Your former coach, Jerry Connor and Matt Gordon, they brought you along, but now ultimately you're in charge and your name's in the paper. What are the things that you're still wrestling with? I think I have X, Y, and Z figured out, but I still am trying to get a system in place for X. And the reason I ask, Lucas, is the whole premise of this show 3 years ago was to create a digital database of mentorship. So new coaches coming into your space right now, getting into the chair, what are the things that like you had to, one, two, three, these are the most important things you have to handle, or everything else can't get done?
I think honestly, some of the most important things being in building is just making sure that players are behaving right, characters on point, academics are on point. Great point, and I like the way you phrase it. The guys that I worked with, they brought me along that journey, and it was a part of the daily conversation of, hey, student A is acting up in class all the time, or grades aren't right, or whatever it is. And as an assistant, it's good to know those things, right? But it just weighs on you heavier. Right, because you want to make sure that your administration knows that you're running a program of high character and academics is stressed. And so I think a lot of off the court stuff, honestly, I think that's the one thing you hear head coaches say all the time too, right? Is most of the stuff you deal with has nothing to do with installing an offense or installing a defense, but it's dealing with character stuff. It's dealing positive or negative, dealing with academics, dealing with making sure your lower levels are in sync with what you guys are doing. Again, being an assistant coach and being the head freshman coach, pretty good gig. You're worried about your team at 4 o'clock playing a game, and then you can recommend things to your head coach and give high fives and coach your kids up. But your name's not the one in the paper. Your name's not the one being scrutinized by spectators, parents, you name it. So understanding like the little intricacies of the day-to-day inside of a building and working with staff and administration. And also too, bigger picture, like understanding that every year is different. Like I was lucky, very lucky, when I was coaching lower levels at Horizon High School, we were good. We just had talent. So if every year, this is easy, right? Man, this is the greatest gig in the world. And then being at Saguaro going into year four now, we've had two pretty good years. And then last year wasn't so great. And this year we're 500 right now, probably trying to figure out ride the wave and got a young team. So being able to recenter yourself as a coach and understand that every year is different, every group is different. Even if you change one piece of the puzzle, it changes the whole dynamic of everything in your organization, right? Whether it's the character, whether it's the way you play or whatever it is. I think that those are things that I constantly remind myself of is the longer you're in a place, it becomes quote unquote, maybe easier to have a process of how you do things, but you need to not just go on autopilot. It is attention to detail every year with everything. You can't just assume there's going to be carryover from one year to the next. That's probably been one of the biggest things I've learned as well.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And it leads me to a follow-up, which is, what do you feel is the best thing you do in your program that has the largest ripple effect on the character you're trying to develop? And by that, I'm often looking for a tangible instead of something in the ether, but that maybe you brought with you from Phoenix College, from Horizon, from Shadow Mountain, where it's like, hey, if I get a new job tomorrow, we're going to do this at my new job regardless, because yeah, it's that important to creating the culture that we're trying to lead.
Yeah, I think it's being, and again, forgive me if some might view this as cliche or whatever it is, I think it's just being authentically yourself. Like the kids can pick up on bullshit and they know if you're being fake, they know if you're being transactional. I've had kids at schools I've been at where you talk to other athletes and you ask them without even looking for it, they'll just tell you, yeah, coach so-and-so, he's just, all he cares about is winning, or all he cares about is talking to our dudes. And like, when I hear that, I'm like, man, what a reminder that kids see and notice more than we think. And we can do a million different things. Like we have a program that our school has adopted where it's character matters, and we have a character trait every week and kids vote on who displays that the most. And it's awesome. And I love the guys who run that and they're great friends of ours. But I always remind our guys, this is just like a teaching tool. You need to be carrying over that quality every week of your life, whether you're in season, out of season. But again, I think it just goes back to us as coaches, if we are true to ourselves and just are genuinely authentic and caring about them, and we talk to them about things that matter. And like for us, it's pretty simple. Like we have two rules in our program. Like it's be on time and do what's right. And it's very vague and generic, but just talking about doing the right thing in the classroom, on the court, making the next great play, being selfless. But I think it's easier just to have those daily conversations with guys about on the court, off the court. But they need to be able to believe and understand that you genuinely care about them, and there's actual investment, you know. And that's the thing I always try and tell myself, or just even talking with our staff, no matter where we're at, whether it's here, the last job, the job before, or wherever we end up 20 years from now, just still be the same person that you are. And continue to strive to get better as a coach too. That's the biggest thing, and become better as a person.
Okay, I'm gonna push back a little bit because I agree with everything you said. And I want to know, on a daily basis, is there something that is a core that you can offer as something that helps develop that? So for example, when I was coaching the boys teams for 20 years, like our guys, we hugged as a group before practice, after practice, before games, after games, intentionally to break down some of the culturally held boundaries that exist so that these young fellas can learn how to emote. As I've transitioned to the girls' side, I'm looking for something similar because, for good reason, I have a little bit of hesitancy from a boundary standpoint of doing it exactly the same as a male coach. And maybe I'm wrong. I should probably ask the girls where they're at with it, but it was like a non-negotiable on my boys squad. And over the years, that, as silly as it seems, was really an opening and closing to conflict, right? Where it's, we might get into it in practice and the game, but at the end, like, we're family's a thing that's thrown around. And I think it's tricky because there may be family aspects to your group, but at the end of the day, right, it might not necessarily be the right interpretation of that, but it always allowed us to have opening and closure, almost more like Ohana. Anything you do along those lines, or you've seen things you maybe wanted to toy with as a, what's the right word? An anchor of something you do that kind of displays who you are as a program.
Yeah, I actually really like that. It's funny that you say, so you guys would do a hug, right? Whether it's a quick, hey,
what's up? Like, you're in a circle and you're going around everybody, like you get everybody in the room.
No
matter how you're feeling, play well, play terribly, like it's happening.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. And that's super awesome. One thing that I've always done every day, and I like that yours is about everybody coming together. So this is where mine's a little different, and I might change this then actually after this conversation, because I think it just changes the mood, right? No matter what, it's here we are. But every day, whether we shoot free throws at some point during our practice plan, right? Somewhere in the middle to break things up. And guys are split up 2-3 to a basket. During that time, I want myself, our staff, to go around and fist bump guys, high five guys, like whatever it is, a brief interaction, maybe ask them about something, about their day, their class, family, like whatever it is. And I always have felt the last couple of years doing it the same thing. Like, you might be on a guy hard, but then there's that moment, might be for 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds, but you're able to recenter and understand that, hey man, like, I was coaching you hard 5 minutes ago, but I'm going to ask you how your family's doing today, or hey, how's that science class going, or whatever it is. And I've been doing that for the last 4 or 5 years. And it's just become a habit of, even as an assistant, trying to find a time during a down period to go around, acknowledge guys. Even pre-practice is a good time too, depending on your schedule. But no, yeah, that's something that we do daily.
To everybody listening, there's got to be something. Right. And it's something that I'm still trying to figure out as I transition over and I'm building culture with my new group. And I think we have a pretty solid connection with everyone, but I'm still trying to figure out what that anchor point is. Whatever y'all come up with, it's important to have one that everybody can point to as meaningful. All right. So as we discussed, you haven't listened to a ton of full episodes, but if you had, you would know that I'm pretty committed to a couple of things. One, multi-sport athletes. Two, cross-disciplinary learning. And by that, you mentioned the reason you like it is you're seeing people from different hats. You're seeing ADs, you're seeing coaches, you're seeing them from different sports, different genders. And so I always ask, and I don't know your background in regards to how you consume content and knowledge, but what have you learned watching other teams that aren't basketball? Usually land this with, the pool is right outside my office, so I watch water polo practice every day and swimming, and I try to steal things from them and apply it to my own approach. So I'm curious, over your career, starting as an 18-year-old to 30 assistant head coach, what is there anything that you have taken directly from watching another sport and applied to basketball that you can speak to as an example of, get out of your tunnel and get a broad spectrum of what's out there?
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. First off, multi-sport, huge on it. We have a school of 1,500 kids here at Saguaro. Our school is a historically major football factory. We're traditionally in the max preps top, whatever you call it. Our most recent head coach just went to Arizona State in the last year to join the football staff over there, and Jason Mons, and he did a phenomenal job in the last 10, 12 years being at Saguaro, maybe even longer than that. When I was at Horizon, I worked for a guy named, or worked with a guy and for Ty Wisdom. He's currently the head coach at Millard South High School in Omaha, Nebraska. And they have a great program over there. It's funny, the nature of our relationship. He got the job at Horizon when I was an assistant there teaching there. So we're teaching together. We're on the same campus. I had nothing better to do one day. I stick around one night and watch one of his first spring practices. And the first thing that really stuck out to me was just his energy, his enthusiasm, his attack the day mentality, whatever you want to call it. And it was just fun. Like, it was a fun energy at their practice. And it was night and day from seeing those boys from the fall before, just everything about them. And it was addicting to watch and just curious to see that process. And eventually, after a full year of him coaching on campus, he ends up coming to me and he's, hey, man, like, you're at everything. Just come join our staff. And I'm like, dude, I don't know. I like watching football, but I can't teach football. And he's like, no, dude, that's bullshit. You're a coach. You're going to be able to help us in our program because coaches coach. It's what they do. We'll help you. And if anything, like, the kids just respect you on campus. They know you're a coach. They know you went to school here. They know it matters to you. And that was just really cool to get that reassurance of, dude, coaches coach. Put yourself in a situation where you're teaching a sport or you're even helping out in any little way possible. It just broadens your horizons. And I tell people all the time, I became better in 3 years being directly inside the walls of a football program in the fall, spring, summer, than I did probably spending any time at doing basketball at times. Just because I think football can teach you, you're dealing with 100-something kids in a program, depending where you're at. And it's just a lot of team stuff, right? And every sport should be a team sport. But for whatever reason, there's just that unique team aspect of football. And the family culture that I learned being around football programs definitely just inspired me to make sure that everything that we do from an organizational standpoint, a team standpoint, is just very emphasized. That's probably the biggest thing that I've learned being around football. We also had a Hall of Fame baseball coach at Horizon. He's USA Baseball's like player development guy right now. His name's Eric Kibler, the winningest coach in Arizona history. He was the coach when I was in high school there. So I had a lot of buddies play for him. And heck, he was nice enough to let me sit in his dugout during games. And I'd sit right next to our athletic trainer who went to school with me in high school. And we would just sit back and just watch him interact. And that was the big thing that I took from him, was just like his small interactions every day with people. I couldn't tell you what he was teaching on the diamond, but just the way he interacted with people, his family, caring, right? Caring about a community. And it made sense why he was so successful, whether he was coaching the USA under 16 team or the varsity baseball team down the street. He just had a very detail oriented about caring about every little side of the program, the field, all three levels, freshman, JV, varsity, each kid, his coaches. So yeah, no, I love that question. I could talk about multi-sport integration all day, because I tell our kids all the time, I wish more kids took us up on this. I don't want to see you in the fall. Play football, run cross country, play baseball, run track. Unfortunately, we're in a world of specialization now more than ever. But man, like, I would love that. Maybe that's more old school, but I think it makes you a better athlete. That's what everyone says. But I forget even that aspect of it. I think it's just being in a different competitive environment makes you better. Being coached by other coaches makes you better, because at a certain point, you're going to be tired of hearing the same 3, 4, 5 voices year round. It's good to have relationships, but eventually there needs to be a break at some point, whether it's a break for AAU or whether it's a break for cross country or football. I think there's a lot of healthiness in that, but no, love the multi-sports. It gets me fired up.
All right. Since you said that, again, if you've listened to this at all, I rail against the youth sports industrial complex and how it is destroying education-based athletics. And I actually tell my kids the same thing. Coach, how can I get better at basketball? Go play lacrosse. Huh? Yeah. You want me in the gym? Nope. And we go from November 1 until the season ends, and that's it. So if you really feel that way, coach, here's your challenge. Put your money where your mouth is. I don't want to see you in the fall or the spring. Go do something else. We're not doing any workouts. But what? Hey, look, this is what we're doing. This is what I believe in. And see what happens. You'd be surprised at how many of them will actually engage in that suggestion when there's nothing else for them to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, I diverge.
So how many kids are in your program, and how many would you say annually typically are doing sports outside of basketball season?
Really good question. And I'm going to answer it with a little context. So we have 520 kids at the school. We are a boarding school with a large day population. So we have about 285 boarders and about 245 day students. 83% of our student population plays an interscholastic sport at some point. I think
50%+ of that, 83% plays at least two sports, and another 30% play three. And so ultimately on my last two, actually, I'll actually throw this in there as well. So we had 15 kids go to play college athletics last year and 16 the year before across all sports. And of those, so that's 31, there were only four single sport athletes. Two of them were sailors. One of them was a water polo goalie, and one of them was a golfer. The others all were at least two. I would say 12 of them were three sport athletes, and two of them were four sport athletes. And so on my basketball team last year, we had 16 kids, and all 15 of them played at least two sports, and 10 of them played three. And so ultimately, I'm in a little different position, so take this with a grain of salt, everyone that's listening. Co-curricular participation at our school is obligatory, so they have to do something. And secondly, as the AD and basketball coach, I always have to wear my AD hat. So it's, you know, I can't tell you that I think it's important and then turn around and offer a bunch of basketball workouts. And so I think there's a way to navigate that. The other thing I'll share, and I'm speaking more than I like to on this thing, is our best competitors are our three sport guys or gals for that matter. We do something at the school that's called Iron Pirate, where if you play three sports a year for 4 years, regardless of level, you get recognized at the end of the year. And then we had nine in a graduating class of 120 last year, right? This year we'll have 12. As it becomes more of a thing, you get kids hanging around and doing other things, which then directly translates to the court, right? And I'm seeing it right now. I'm on a rant, sorry. With, as I shift to the girls basketball program, one of my athletes that did not play a ton last year as a junior, she's now a senior. I think she's had the easiest time transitioning to picking up the new systematic things because she's a three sport athlete. She plays field hockey. She plays lacrosse. She understands movement and space. And ultimately that's helped her transition faster than some kids that are single sport kids, which has been really interesting to watch. That was your question. I don't know if you had any feedback on that before we pivot.
No, it completely makes sense. Conversations that I would hear even from football coaches I've been around, talking to their kids, trying to encourage them, hey, it's all right if you miss some spring ball because you're running track. Like, we have a kid who's in the NFL now, Keely Ringo. He was at Saguaro, had the game-winning or game-securing interception last year or 2 years ago against Alabama in the national championship. He was a stud on the track, and it didn't hurt him one bit. He's making millions of dollars now and going to have a pretty good career in the NFL. And it didn't hurt him one bit to run track. And you give those examples, and then you have some kids who maybe would just be really good high school athletes and competitors, and there's nothing wrong with that. But even they're hesitant to go astray and sacrifice a spring basketball workout or whatever it is. We have a young man who is a tremendous basketball player, and he joined the cross-country team in the fall. And it was like really trying to convince him, like, dude, like, you're good. Like, you don't have to go to fall workouts. Like, I get it. You're running before school. You're running after school. You have the district meet next week. Yeah, I know we have a fall league game next Saturday, but guess what? It's not going to make or break anything that you do on the basketball court this year. So the more people we have promoting that message overall, and it's hard, the world we're in now, but the more word we get out there, the positives of it, it'll only help.
Yeah. And I'll finish with this and then I'm going to move on, because we could talk about this for the next 12 hours, is that as adults, I really feel that part of our job is to remove decisions from kids in regards to them feeling that they have to disappoint someone, right? So it's, he's on the cross country team, you're hosting a fall workout, which one do I go to? I'm going to let somebody down. And so I've worked really hard with our department to remove those conflicts as much as possible, because ultimately that's where we're tearing at the fabric of that kid's soul, so to speak, versus no, like right now, this is where you should be. And that's okay. And ultimately it's a tough needle to thread, especially like you said, in the world we're living in, because there's outside voices that are giving them the opposite message. And I think that's the tough thing, but it is what it is, and everybody's got to make their own choices. All right, let's go to this. As you have progressed over 4 years, I talk a lot about failing forward. Are there any particular failures that you can point to that were transformational for you on this journey that allow you to stand on a few things right now based on how you didn't navigate it well in the past?
Yeah, I always tell people it's easy to reflect and say, oh man, if I could go back and do it over again, but there's a reason you go through it. So you get better. And for me last year, we had a group of our team. We had about 14 kids on it. Varsity team, 7 of those guys were seniors, guys who've been with us for a little bit. And honestly, just easy to say now, I gave them too much trust and gave them too much leeway on the court in terms of what they were doing offensively, in terms of, quite frankly, probably having them on the floor longer than they should have been at times and not going with younger guys, not giving other people opportunities. And again, easy to be reflective on it now and say, man, next time I'm in this situation. But at the end of the day, from a competitive standpoint, got to go with guys who are giving you the best opportunity to win in that moment. And I think there were some times last year, not throughout the whole year, but moments throughout the year that I can remember where it's, man, probably had a little bit longer leash for those guys. And especially when the season went more sour and knowing there really was no realistic chance of postseason play or a deep postseason run, excuse me, turning to some of those young guys. And then now we're in a moment like now where we have a bunch of guys who really haven't had much varsity experience. And now I'm sitting there thinking, man, they could have gotten their opportunities last year if I would have given them some opportunities. And then maybe we'd be slightly a little bit further ahead of schedule than where we're at right now. But again, like, you learn through it and it just helps you understand, like, next time you're in a similar situation, you think back to that moment. And like you said, it only helps you.
All right, I'm going to ask a follow-up to that that may feel like somewhat of a pushback. While yes, if you're looking at the outcome-based results that maybe you could have been a little bit better right now had you given those younger guys more burn, what would you have had to sacrifice from a culture, from an inclusion standpoint, had you stopped, not even playing? Let's use the word honoring the work those older kids have done, right? So it's, hey, I need to have a little tighter leash on them. They're doing more than I was comfortable with. But we struggle with this a little bit where, right, you have a senior who's put the work in that may be struggling, and you got somebody in the wings that could probably make a transformational difference. But late in the season, do you do that just to win a game or two, or do you just ride it out so that there's a belief in culture and trust that these guys put their time in and they're going to at least get a chance, right? And I know, again, it's not binary, but it is something that I ask to challenge your thinking a little bit more on it.
Yeah, I smile when you say that, because then it makes you think, were you doing the right thing then? Instead of thinking the opposite, like, right, depending on the outcome, which is not always the right thing to do, that will redirect your headspace with it. So no, actually, that's a fantastic challenge or pushback. Because what would you sacrifice? You would sacrifice trust and relationships. And at the end of the day, it's bigger than wins and losses. It's bigger than any of that. And what matters is these guys know you have their back and you care about them, and there's that belief and trust in them. So no, a fantastic retort there. We believed in those guys till the end, and tell the guys all the time every year, like, 20 years from now, you're not going to remember what your record was your sophomore year on JV, or even your record on your varsity team, your junior or senior year. But what you will remember is the relationships you have with your teammates, coaches you have. No, that's a real positive thought there. Then, like, those guys hopefully know walking away, there was an unwavering belief, maybe to a fault at times, but that shows younger guys too in the program, hey, they're going to rock with you until the end and through high and low. And so no, I like that wave of thinking and always having to remind yourself, it's hard at times, but not being driven by the outcome, right? And understanding the long game in it, the big picture in it, so on and so forth.
And there's going to be times where you have to make difficult decisions. That's what you sign up for as a coach. And sports are a meritocracy. And at the end of the day, it's, this kid is playing better, he's going to get the minutes, this is how we make
playing time decisions. I always struggle with, like, and I joke about this, and you can weigh in on your own, but I think coaching is worth, in basketball, if you're playing a 24-game season, maybe 3 or 4 wins. Outside of that, you either have dudes or you don't, right?
And yeah.
Okay, so if there's a through line of where your season's going to go anyway, and you're talking about relationships being important, if you're trying to sneak one of those 4 wins at the expense of an experience of a kid in education-based athletics, is it worth it? And hell, I don't know the answer. It's just where I think in the game situations where you have 30, 30, 30 guys, right? That it's like up 30, down 30, 30 seconds left. And can you get them in earlier? Is winning by 30 and winning by 5 the same thing at the end of the day, right? And so it's at this point of my career, I'm way more cognizant of those things than I am focused on, hey, we got to get this win. And I know everybody's on a different path on their timeline, but it's something that weighs heavy for me. Even last night, just watching our game, and we're up 20, and it's, yo, let's start getting these dudes in. The boys' game I was watching, and ultimately some things start falling away, and it didn't work out the way that I would have hoped for, but it was the right decision in the moment. And so it's more about that than your, I think, analysis of self, where it was like this was some sort of failure. And it's, I don't necessarily know. Like, I'm not there, but there's more ingredients in that stew.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And going back to your first comment, when you say like coaching's 3-4 game, maybe difference a year, I completely agree with that. I think it's entirely overrated at times. I was joking with our assistant, and he spent time as a junior college head coach, Division I stops here and there. And I turned to him and I'm like, people don't realize it comes down to, do you have dudes and is your schedule somewhat favorable? Or you have some wins and you have some tough region games perhaps, and 50-50 split those maybe? That's really what it comes down to. And especially at the high school level, if you have a dominant presence inside and you have a little bit of size, and we're not talking about high school, prep school, stuff like that, just public school, high school basketball, our 2 best years out of the 4 years, we had a football player who could rebound the heck out of it and everybody else got out of the way. And then go like year 3, you realize a few weeks in, you're like, man, we're not rebounding well. Oh, wait, what's his face is playing at Arizona State playing football right now. So that's probably why we're not rebounding it well. But yeah, no, it might be inappropriate for me to say this, but coaching is so overrated, because if you have dudes, you're probably going to win most of your games. And like what Popovich says, right? Anyone who says I'm a magic coach, you're full of shit. I had Hall of Famers who helped me win hundreds of games.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a realistic person, you know, your good years is because you have some pretty good guys or gals. It's not because of the inbounds play you had or the transition set you had, because everybody runs the same stuff. You just have guys who can execute it maybe a little bit better. But what does matter is, are you teaching them to be disciplined in their life, character, family, relationships, highs and lows? People are going to be frustrated at times, coaches included, but just being able to ride the wave and help navigate these young people is what it's all about.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, to be fair in that, you do have people that can so transformationally change, let's say, the organization based on the conditions their school and their district allow for, that you can pivot from not being very good to being really good quickly based on time on task and how much time you can get in the gym and all those things. So don't hear this wrong, that there are things that you can't do. But generally speaking, from November to February, it's like riding a horse that you came in on, right?
Yes. There are things, yes, that is perfect. Like November to February, it's like you blink and where did time go? A week like this week for us, we don't have any games this week. It's our finals week. So we're going to practice 6 days this week. And to have 6 practices in a row, like I was telling our assistant, like, this is weird. Like, I'm not used to this, because normally we have some sort of even 1 game sprinkled in throughout the week. Mm-hmm. So it's been nice. 3 days in this week, we've had 3 practices, you know, and it's just a good, weird feeling, like, hey, we're practicing. This is awesome. But no, yeah, like the most impact you can make, though, because of how quick of a whirlwind it is in the season, absolutely is those off-season months, culturally, who you're bringing in, what you're bringing in, not even from a talent acquisition standpoint, but just who are you surrounding yourselves with, other coaches you have, what resources do you have on your campus? We're lucky. We have a strength and conditioning coach for the first time for like all of our sports on our campus. And for a public school, it's pretty rare. Maybe football has one or here and there, whatever it is. And he's been awesome for us. I can't look too far ahead, but I'm looking forward to them just having a full year of class during the day where they're just in the weight room doing stuff in the off season, and it doesn't interfere with other sports, but it's just kind of part of their daily routine. And so whether it's strength and conditioning or character stuff, and just spending time with the guys, I think that's the biggest thing, guys and gals, is like the more time that you show that you're invested in them and, hey, willing to open the gym here. We have an assistant willing to open the gym at this time. If guys want to do it, that's great. But yeah, no, for sure. The most growth you make is in the off season. Cause in season, man, it starts and it's hard to feel like you have a grasp on thing at times.
Absolutely. Skills equal freedom. And at some point you got to develop that. And that really makes the transformational stuff as athletes, if you listen to this. Okay. I got a couple more and we'll wrap up. What have you most recently changed your mind on? And I usually ask this in regards to just being a growth mindset individual. It doesn't have to be basketball related, but it's, you know what? I used to be dug in over here, and actually I'm over here now. And here's why. Intentionally making a decision to change your way of thinking about something particular.
Wow. That is might be one of the best questions I've ever been asked. No one's ever asked that. I would say just being okay with being patient. I have struggled with being impatient, and I feel like it's gotten worse as I've gotten older. And part of it, again, and I always say this too, coaches are afraid to be vulnerable with other coaches and even with the public and talk about like their mental psyche and state. And I struggled with it for a little bit too, but I think it's healthy to talk about and it just makes it better for you. I've grown an appreciation for anybody that can sustain any sort of excellence in anything for a long time. Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, Greg Popovich, name your favorite, whatever. It is mind-blowing because it is harder. And I think Saban said this to Belichick on their HBO thing. Once you climb the mountain, you become the mountain, and everyone's trying to come at you. And just trying to maintain that standard of excellence is harder than probably even getting there at times. And so just being patient in that process is something that I've needed to take a step back, reset, center, be patient, understand there's going to be highs and lows. I've been really lucky, and I'm not the only one, where my first year coaching back in 2012, coaching my own team, we went, I forget how many games we won, but we won a bunch of games. It was the most in the program for a long time recently too. But reflectively now, I'm like, I had a kid who ended up being a Division I wide receiver and a kid who's in the NFL, probably was going to win a lot of games no matter what. And I'm like, man, this is easy. This is awesome. Maybe it's good that we won, so it kept me coming back to coaching. But then you understand, like, every year's different. I've already referenced that. But even at Saguaro, like, my first year, we won, like, big. And my AD tells me all the time, he's like, you want to know the worst thing that could have happened to you in your first year is that you won. Because that is the expectation moving forward, which is good. But it also can be a detriment to the program. And we saw it. Like, we had guys transfer in after year one, and they weren't here for the right reasons. They were here for the transactional aspect of it. And that hurt us a little bit. It set us back probably a year. But again, learning from it, growing from it. So being patient with myself, being patient with the process. We always tell our guys to believe in these things, believe in the process, believe in being patient. So for me, it's taking a really hard look at it and like actually living it, because I don't worry about relationships with guys being authentic in that regard. Always going to be the same person, win, lose, or draw. But when you have those inner thoughts with yourself, it's treating yourself fairly. It's treating yourself in a positive light to understand the way that in your career, right, coaching it on different sides of it, being an AD now, there's highs and lows, and a lot of the temporary stuff is bullshit, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. So you got to just be patient. It, for me, is the biggest thing that I try and continue to be good at, is just be more patient with everything.
Yeah, don't go for the ball fake. If you're looking at outcome-based results as some sort of assessment of how you did, or if I am, I think we're missing the big picture. And I think there's ways around that. All right, let me throw this at you. And this is for everyone else as well. I just got back from the National Athletic Director Conference, spent 4 days there, took five different classes, went to 10 different breakout sessions. And the last day, I went to see my friend present on equity and inclusion and belonging. And Rick Toon, who's the athletic director at Punahou, and Anthony Thomas, who's the athletic director at University High School in San Francisco, were talking about the idea of belonging and the idea of creating some vulnerability and creating spaces where people could be themselves. And Anthony asked this question as the AD. He's like, how many of you have coaches meetings? Everybody raised their hand. How many of you put them in a circle and then you stand in the middle and you ask them, what's my biggest weakness or my greatest weakness as an athletic director? And let them answer. Because if they do, right, then you have a sense of belonging where people feel that they can share their opinion. And he says, I've taken to doing that. I've encouraged my coaches to do it. And it really tests, and I'm going to use the word culture, but it really tests the space that you've created for voices to be heard. So I got back from the conference and grabbed my athletic staff and I asked them that and got some feedback, which is pretty funny. And then I went in right from there to practice and stood the girls in the circle and I asked them to say, what's my greatest weakness as a coach? And it was a little bit quiet. And then one of the girls who's like best friends with my daughter was like this and this. And then the other ones were still leery, but I was like, all right, talk to the person next to you, come up with something and then share it. And I got a couple different things, but then it also empowered my coaches to be like, I got one for you where it's okay. You're modeling this. One, I want feedback because I want to be better. And the only way I'm going to get it is by asking the people that I serve. And two, hey, like we all want to be better. And so when we give feedback, it's intended to be helpful. So I offer that to you as a self-assessment. I'm going to ask you right now, what's your greatest weakness as a coach? But then I'm going to challenge you and go to practice today, stand the boys in the circle and ask them and see what they say.
No, I love that. I love that. That's awesome. I would say the greatest weakness, and again, probably what I just referenced, is being impatient at times. And you always, I had this conversation with our beach volleyball coach, and he was an indoor volleyball coach for a while in our district.
Really quickly, beach volleyball in Scottsdale, Arizona. We'll come back to that.
Sorry, sand volleyball out here. No beaches out here. But no, like we always talk about reminding ourselves that these guys and gals are 15, 16 years old. And sometimes when you look at them, like we have a sophomore on our team who looks like he's 25 years old. And there was a moment the other day in practice where I was on him pretty hard. And then I took a step back and I'm like, this guy can't even drive yet. Like he is not even 16 years old yet or just turned 16. So being patient with the process is probably my biggest impatience at times, or probably most self-critique of myself. And then maybe a second one that I would give myself that I think I've come a long way with over the years, but understanding that everybody can't be coached the same way. And in the moment being like, oh man, I'm going to really tear into this person, but I've gotten a lot better relationally with our guys, especially our young guys in the last year. Cause now I know who I can put my arm around and share a few words with in between a set, in between an action, whatever it is. And there's some guys who like have told me like, hey coach, like the best way for me to get a response is to, it's all right to get in me a little bit. And kids are becoming more reflective of that, I think, of themselves. I think they just become more educated. I don't know if it's through their teachers, their parents. Maybe they take self-assessments online. I think it's really important too. I've done this with teams in the past, especially when you have a bunch of new kids, is you let them take that learning test, right? And it tells you what type of learner they are, right? And that might not tell you how they respond best, but at least shows them and shows you who they are as a person from a learning standpoint. But yeah, in short, going back to it, probably being impatient and then still getting better at it, but understanding that not everybody is wired the same way as you. I had a senior last year who told me, he's like, coach, I don't love this like you do. And he's, I'm here to have fun. but he's, I respect how you handle your business, how much it means to you, like the accountability. But he was very straight up. It was right before the season started. He's, I'm here to have fun. He's like, this is fun for me. And I was able to be like, man, I respect you, number one, for coming to me and talking to me about that. Two, I know how to get a better response out of you now. And then also on top of that, like it went to show you can not love it as much as maybe I do or some of your teammates do, but you're still able to help us win at a very high level and be very impactful. And he was a kid who liked playing basketball, but loved being with his friends. Just understanding that whole wave of it, because as a coach, people can joke around and say, oh, well, we're always going to be unhappy. There's always something to get better at, or right. But once you understand the whole view of each of your kids, then you become a little bit better. But I'm sure my guys would give me the same feedback. So I'll report back to you what they share with me. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'll be curious if they say the same thing. We'll talk afterwards.
Yeah.
All right, hey, this has been fun. I'm going to offer one more thing to people listening based on what you just said about learning tests and learning preferences and how people receive information. It's something that has been front of mind for me later in my career than it was at the beginning. And if you really want to figure out why it matters, I challenge everybody who's listening to this to go and take a one-on-one lesson from somebody like Pilates, have a personal trainer in a weight room. Just one time, something where there's a specific yoga, where it's one-on-one, and you're going to find out really quickly whether you have a verbal learning preference, physical. Like I have to have people when they're teaching me something, if it's physical, like Pilates or in the weight room, like I'm like, you got to put me in the right position because I can't process what it is you're telling me to do. And it was transformational for me to figure out like, whoa, if this is how I'm receiving it, I wonder how my kids are. So there's a challenge for everybody to try to figure that out, because it's super eye-opening when you realize how your own learning preferences get in the way of your knowledge acquisition.
Yeah, no question. That's it's an awesome resource, and I like that. Whether it's yoga, whether it's personal training, whatever it is, you're right. You will learn very quickly what you are.
Yep, one session is all it takes. All right, Coach, thanks for being here today. I appreciate you. Looking forward to hearing back the response. And if anybody wants to follow you on any of the socials, where can they find you?
Yeah, first off, thank you so much. This is awesome and very thought-provoking, and definitely looking forward to going back and not just listening to this one, but listening to others and downloading them and reporting back to you. Also good nuggets from some other great speakers you've had. But yeah, follow on Instagram or X or Twitter, whatever we call it nowadays, at Coach L. Ramirez. So yeah, feel free to reach out anytime to connect or whatever it might be.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes will get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. ttroops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down an Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.